Thank you, Mr. Miller, and good Sabbath to everybody. And also like to welcome those who have joined us over the internet. Thank you for attending services with us through this medium. Just a real quick clarification for the announcements. Youngstown is going to have services every week moving forward at 1 o'clock, and we will have the 2 o'clock. And then on the second Sabbath, when Mr. Stiver does the going from Youngstown to here, it'll be at 11 in the morning. So you can keep that in mind. If you plan to go to Youngstown, it'll be at 1 o'clock. God teaches us many different lessons from His Word, from the Bible, and lots of other ways as well. And we are taught in several different ways. One of the ways that God uses is through the use of contrasts and comparisons. And we find many different contrasts and comparisons in places like the Psalms. We also see them in stories about relationships, like in families, different family relationships. And there are several that we can find between parents and children. We also find contrasts between siblings, brothers and sisters. The lessons we are to learn regarding the relationships include primarily the relationship that we have with God, between us and Him, and between God and His people, and the effects that proper relationships have and also improper relationships have for us. In the book of Genesis, there is a contrasting comparison between siblings that actually connects to prophecy, and it has impacted history. It also affects us today, not just in this country, but around the world. It has impacted in many different ways. And for us, the main focus, of course, is here in the United States and on God's people specifically. The lesson is shown in the contrasting comparisons between two brothers and their attitude towards God and the impact that it has gone through throughout history because of it. It has to do with the relationship between God and man, again, but specifically what happens when there is a disregard for and a turning away from God's laws and God's ways and His promises and the rejecting of God's people. If you are taking notes and you'd like to have titles, we can use When People Turn Their Backs on God. This subject about what's going on and about the consequences of turning one's back on God and the effects that it has on individuals and on nations and on God's people as well is something that all of us have been talking about for quite some time because of the things that are going on in this country and in this world, the stuff that's been happening because of terrorism and other types of things as well. It's something that we've been thinking about because this is something that has been intensifying as time goes on. Some of what we will be covering is referred to in a book, and I forgot to bring it. The book is titled Esau Rising, and it is written by Bill Cloud. But the subtitle to this book is Ancient Adversaries and the War for America's Soul. The book actually deals with history, but also it deals with prophecy and this country, the United States, and the people of God, and the rejecting of God. Let's first take a look at some of the relationships with family, specifically the contrast between parents and children. And, of course, their relationship with God. There are many stories throughout the Bible, or examples, about righteous kings and righteous children who become kings, and also unrighteous kings and children who become unrighteous kings. In 2 Chronicles chapter 32 and 33, we find a religious king and a son who became an unrighteous king. I'm sorry, a righteous king, and then his son became unrighteous. Let's take a look at this in 2 Chronicles, and we'll start in chapter 32. There is a common thread that seems to weave through each type of king as we look through the Bible, both righteous and unrighteous. In 2 Chronicles chapter 32, and we'll begin in verse 24. Now, in those days, Hezekiah became sick. 2 Chronicles 32, verse 24. And was at a point of death. And he prayed to the Lord, and he answered him and gave him a sign. But Hezekiah did not make return according to the benefit done to him, for his heart was proud. Therefore, wrath came upon him and Judah and Jerusalem. But Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart, both he and his inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord did not come upon them in the days of Hezekiah. Hezekiah was a God-fearing king. He also sinned, though, just as King David did. And like King David, when Hezekiah was faced with his sin, he humbled himself. He asked for forgiveness, and he turned back to God. And God responded with mercy. And that's a good lesson for us to keep in mind as well when we face sins in our lives, to be able to humble ourselves and turn back to God. Verse 33. And Hezekiah slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the upper part of the tombs of the sons of David. And all Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem did him honor at his death. And Manasseh, his son, reigned in his place. Here we see the contrast between Hezekiah and his son Manasseh. Manasseh was not a righteous king, and we know that. He was an evil ruler. Manasseh watched how his father ruled the kingdom and how he lived his life and how he walked with God, yet he chose to ignore God and not walk the way his father did. He chose to worship false gods and even sacrificed his children to by fire so that he could praise the, and please the false god Moloch. He practiced witchcraft and he practiced sorcery, and he led Israel away from God. And of course, this provoked God to anger. Now, Manasseh and the people of Israel paid a dear price for their rejecting of God and their rebellion. Let's take a look at this in 2 Chronicles. This example shows that God does keep his word. Whenever he says, he keeps his word. And he will not tolerate a nation's disregard towards him, not as a nation or as individuals or as a people within that nation. The lesson for us is obvious. God will not tolerate sin. 2 Chronicles, and we'll read in chapter 33. Manasseh rejected God's authority and held a disregard for God's laws and God's ways, turning his back on God. And we'll begin in verse 1 of chapter 33 in 2 Chronicles. Manasseh was 12 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 55 years in Jerusalem. And he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord drove out before the people of Israel. Verse 9, Manasseh had led Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem astray, to do more evil than the nations whom the Lord destroyed before the people of Israel. The Lord spoke to Manasseh and to his people, but they paid no attention. Therefore the Lord brought upon them the commanders of the armies of the king of Assyria, who captured Manasseh with hooks and bound him with chains of bronze and brought him to Babylon. There was an attitude in Manasseh that God hated, and he hates that same attitude today. One more example about relationships and the contrasts. We'll look in chapter 2 of Judges, if you want to turn there. The nation of Israel has had quite a history of kings and the people obeying God and also disobeying God, going back and forth. The cause of the people's suffering was because of this, because of their disobedience. And this disobedience can be tied to the leadership that was in place at those times, its attitude and its disregard for God. For us, God's reaction to this country can also be turned to the response because of our attitudes and the attitudes of our leaders as well, and I think we all know this. Judges chapter 2, and we'll read verses 7 through 15. This cause and effect relationship continues to this day, not just with the nation of Israel. Judges chapter 2, I'll begin in verse 7, and I'll be reading from the English Standard Version. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works that the Lord had done for Israel. And Joseph, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. And they buried him within the boundaries of his inheritance in Tumrah-Haris, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of the mountain of Gosh. And all that generation also were gathered to their fathers. And there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done for Israel. This is another way of saying that the people forgot their God. Also, they did not honor God anymore or keep his commandments anymore, or fulfill the purpose that God had set for the nation of Israel and for his people. So they sinned. There was no respect or honor given to God. Judges 2, verse 11. And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them, and bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger. They abandoned the Lord and served the Baals and the Asheroth. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he gave them over to plunderers who plundered them, and he sold them to the hand of the surrounding enemies, so that they could no longer withstand their enemies. Whenever they marched out, the hand of the Lord was against them for harm, as the Lord had warned, and as the Lord had sworn to them, and they were in terrible distress. A common thread so far, the attitudes of each king and of the nation of Israel, or the children of God, and down through history the same thing, always will always determine God's response, whether it's a blessing or a cursing. The way we respond and live our life according to God as a people and as a nation will determine the response that God gives towards us. Now consider our country, the United States. We are a nation that has pushed God aside since the beginning of the founding of this country. It has turned away from the true God, and we all know this. It embraces idols. Now, we're not looking at idols of statues of stone or iron or bronze of some sort. Not that type of idol, but we do worship stuff in this country and activities like money. There's a lot of worshiping of money. Sports activities, people love that, and the abilities of some of the different athletes. Entertainers are worshipped as well, fame and reputation, to just name a few things that the people in this country, actually in the world, tend to worship. The United States of America was founded on the biblical principles with the intent to guarantee freedom of worship. But we also know that this country was included in prophecy to receive blessings from God as long as we did what we were instructed to do, and that we lived by the mind of Christ that was in us. Of course, back then that term was not used, but it is now. As long as we did what we were instructed to do and our attitude towards God was correct. Over the years, we removed God from much of our public life and also our private life. Prayers in schools, and there's a lot of things we can put on this list, but prayers in the schools were deemed to be unconstitutional. What once was a nation under God has become a nation that tolerates sin. It puts down anyone that says there is an absolute truth, even mocking anyone who calls themselves Christian. and at the same time puts up with and encourages certain religions to do whatever they want to do. But yet the religion of this country, or the religions in this country that this country was founded on, is being restrained. If any nation turns its back on God, his judgment is inevitable. He may be patient, but it is inevitable. Unless the people repent and make him their God once again, that includes the leaders of the country, not just the people. As God's children, his called out ones, our responsibility is to know and to fulfill our purpose, to pray that God would draw the heart of his people and us closer to him and back to him, and to help us as his people to preach the gospel to this country and to the world, and ask him for help and his truth throughout our land. There is more, of course, to our calling than that, but this is just part of it. What kind of a mindset would allow for the pushing of such a perverted way of living? It started with Satan, way back before man was even created, when Satan wanted to rule over this earth, to rule over what God had placed there. Then there was the contrasting attitudes that are listed through the Bible, and the first one that we run into is Cain and Abel. Between those two brothers, there was some contrasting conflicts. There was a great contrast between Esau and Jacob. This attitude actually continues to be found in other stories throughout the Bible. For example, the wicked Haman in the book of Esther. The Roman kings that desired to kill the baby Jesus, and all that that took place there. It continued through history, including the killing of the Jews by Hitler, that particular attitude. And today, by one religion that wants first the Sabbath, or actually they say the Saturday keepers, to be destroyed, and then the Sunday keepers to be destroyed. That's actually something in their writings that they want to have happen, is destruction of God's people, the Sabbath keepers, and then the Sunday keepers. There is a major rope, I call it not just a string, but a rope that connects all of these attitudes, not just a thread, but this attitude of disdain for what is of God, a hatred for God's people, desiring to destroy all the connections to the past, especially if it is connected to God, his laws, and proper righteous moral conduct. It also connects to our birthright for us as God's children, and is found in the prophecies about Esau and Jacob and the attitude of Esau. Let's look at this in the book of Genesis. It is a bit dry in here, isn't it? I'm going to take the glass on the left because Mr. Coons had the one on the right, and he's always right. It's good. This is in the book of Genesis. This is where the book that I referred to earlier, Esau Rising, goes into a lot of detail and explanation of what happened and what it tells about the future as it relates to today, to this country and to God's people. Genesis chapter 25. Everything, though, that's in this book, and I would suggest if you like this kind of reading to pick it up, it's very valuable in helping us to focus on things, but everything that is in this book we've all heard. But the way that is actually pieced together and woven through helps us to understand the attitude with a little more depth and to see where the process is going. The mindset of Esau and the future events as prophesied and the blessings given to Jacob and to Esau. And you know, as you go through that, it's very sobering when you begin to understand what's happening. Genesis 25, and I'll begin in verse 29, and I'll be reading from the English Standard Version. Genesis 25, verse 29. Once when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field, and he was exhausted. And Esau said to Jacob, "Let me eat some of that red stew before I am exhausted." For his name was called Edom. Now, when you get into the history of this, this is a very relevant point to identifying Esau and Edom as you look down through prophecy. Verse 31, Jacob said, "Sell me your birthright now." Esau said, "I am about to die. Of what use is a birthright to me?" Jacob said, "Swear to me now." So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil soup, stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went his way. This is what God says about that. Thus Esau despised his birthright. This is important to understand what happened. Esau gave up his birthright. He sold it because it was of no value to him at that moment. It was worthless. His birthright was worth less to him than a mere bowl of soup. Chapter 27. Let's move forward to the blessings that were given to Jacob and Esau. Chapter 27. We know that the story of how Jacob and his mom tricked his father and received the blessing that was meant for the firstborn. And we'll start in verse 21 of Genesis chapter 27. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son," and he answered, "Here I am." He said, "Behold, I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, and you shall bring it, take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me. And prepare for me delicious food, such as I love, and bring it to me so that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went out to the field to hunt for the game and bring it, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. Bring me game and prepare it for me, delicious food that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord before I die." Then Rebekah gave Jacob some instructions. "Now therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me two good young goats so I may prepare from them delicious food for your father, such as he loves. And you shall bring it to your father to eat, so that he may bless you before he dies." Rather than going through all of the facts and the story and all the details, let's jump down to verse 28 for the two blessings. First, we'll take a look at the blessing that went to Jacob. Verse 28. "May God give you the dew of the heaven and of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers." This, as you take a look through prophecy, this being Lord over your brothers is actually very important later on through the prophecy and as we look into the latter times. "And may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be anyone who curses you. Blessed be anyone who blesses you." Now the deception is discovered in verse 30. As soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac, his father, Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting. He also prepared delicious food and brought it to his father. And he said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me." His father, Isaac, said to him, "Who are you?" He answered, "I am your son, your firstborn, Esau." Then Isaac trembled very violently and said, "Who was it that had hunted game and brought it to me, and I ate of it before you came, and I blessed him? Yes, and he shall be blessed." As soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me, even me also, O my father." But he said, "Your brother came deceitfully, and he has taken away your blessing." Esau said, "Is he not rightfully named Jacob? For he has cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessings." Then he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" Isaac answered him and said, "Esau, behold, I have made him lord over you and all your brothers. I have given him for servants, and with grain and wine I have sustained him. What can I do for you, my son?" Esau said to his father, "Have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father." And Esau lifted up his voice, and he wept. Now Esau receives his blessing. But it is more than, it is really not a true blessing. It's more of an explanation of what is going to happen, a prophecy, if you will, and what has happened down through the years and why we are seeing what we are seeing today. What is happening to the U.S., what we're seeing today, and also to the world? Verse 39. Then Isaac his father answered and said to him, "Behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of the heaven, heaven on high." This, if you pay attention to it, is actually a description of a desert type of environment where these people have lived through most of history. "By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck." The yoke or control over Esau would be broken when he becomes restless. Now, here's referring back to the Esau Rising written by Bill Cloud. This is where Bill Cloud explains that the restlessness from Esau happens when Jacob, God's people, do not live as God instructed him, does not live up to the purpose that God set for him, for them, and for us as God's people. When Jacob or his progeny down through history turns their back on God, now we see a very deep hate that Esau had for God's blessed individual, that being, of course, his brother, Jacob. His hatred has continued down through history and down through the years against all that is God's, all that is God's laws, his ways, and his people. In this case, all the way down to now, the blessing of this nation, of Manasseh, of the United States. Genesis 27, verse 41, it reads, "Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, 'The days of mourning for my father are approaching. Then I will kill my brother Jacob.'" God actually protected Jacob. The hatred that Esau had, again, continued down through the years, but God did protect Jacob at that time and his people going down through history. Throughout his lineage, and as an attitude, we have seen this in the history of through the people and the nations when different individuals try to destroy what belonged to God, destroying anything that was God's. The Jews in the book of Esther by the wicked Haman, and Hitler when he tried to destroy a part of God's people, the chosen people, the tribe of Judah. And the conflict of the nations around Israel today, the deep-seated hate for what is going on and what belongs to God, and the push to neutralize anything that is called Christian. But again, God protects his people. And I know we have covered this before, but it's very interesting that the protective shield that is around Israel whenever rockets are shot in. It's rare that anything actually penetrates into the nation that is sent in to destroy the people. God protects his people for a purpose, of course. But there is a very deep-seated hatred that continues on through today. Anything that reflects righteousness, anything going back to past morals, anything that goes back to God's laws is also hated, and a push to neutralize them. Anything now that actually is the rule of law, and we see with the different riots that are taking place and the different things that are happening in this country and around the world, the disdain for actual law, not just God's law, but moving forward. And of course, that comes from Satan. Anything that reflects the mind of Christ is hated and pushed against and tried to be neutralized. Today, the progressive push is to not return to the ways of the past. And we see that in the progressive movement. But to move forward away from the old ways is subtle and it is very destructive. The purpose of God's people has slowly eroded to the point that all of the countries and the peoples that God has blessed over the years don't even know who they are. They have forgotten God. There are laws written to counter God's laws, as if the laws of God are antiquated, old, passé, racist, homophobic, no longer relevant. Laws that permit killing of babies, laws that violate the Ten Commandments, laws allowing men to be with men and women to be with women, to do what God said is not permitted, and laws that call sin good. Laws against any who disagree with those laws that are against God's ways. What about this country today? Have we as a people turned our backs on God? I think we all know the answer to that. Our land, this world, but our land has become sick. Sick in its mind and in so many different ways. The mindset and the attitude of Satan projected through individuals like Esau. Today, we see this attitude of Esau in action. And it is the cause of this country's, and of course the world's as well, troubles. It was and is prophesied to happen. But there is good news. No, there is great news also in this prophecy. The prophecy also includes God said he would protect his people. And he demonstrated that through the years and through what happened with Esau and Jacob. And he protected Jacob from Esau and their progenies going down through the years, even to this day. So the good news of God replaces the yoke back on the neck of Esau if and only if God's people, and this includes us in the time of Laodicea, if God's people will live according to the purpose God has set for us, and that the mind of Christ would live in us and we would live accordingly. There is a promise God gives us found in 2 Chronicles. How do we start as a people in this nation and as God's children? There are several scriptures that God tells us how we are to live, like action steps throughout the Bible, and we can find them the way that we are supposed to live and follow, like in Psalms, the Sermon on the Mount, and also in the book of Galatians. But let's take a look at just one for the final scriptures, if you would. Let's turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 7. Our God is a very patient God. He's very gracious, he's very loving, and a forgiving God. He will guide us. But one thing that we need to keep in mind is he will guide us if we act, if we do, if we move forward, if we are found so doing. Because if we stand still and do nothing, we can't be guided. You can't guide something that's just sitting still. We have to be doing. And it is the will, it is His will, God's will, that all would choose to return to Him. It is our attitude that He watches. It is also the attitude that shows in our character and in our personality and the way that we live our life. Now, this promise is a conditional promise. It's the good news, and we find it in verse 14. 2 Chronicles 7, verse 14. If my people, who are called by my name, humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sins and heal their land. Thank you.